Welcome to Mom Talk Radio, the show that tackles topics important to you and your family. Finances, food, education, technology, and everything in between. We've got it covered on Mom Talk. Now, Mary Donnellan on Mom Talk Radio.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of Mom Talk Radio that originally aired in July 2016.
Welcome to Mom Talk Radio. This is Mary Donnellan in for Maria Bailey. Maria and her oldest daughter are traveling in Asia as we speak, so we are all very jealous as we bake in the sun down here in sunny South Florida. And around the country, it's not much different. Everybody's suffering, or at least bearing with the heat. Hopefully you are going to the beach or a pool somewhere with your kids and enjoying it. Make sure to put that sunscreen on, wear those hats, and stay sun safe. Today is actually National Parents Day. You know, you Google these funny holidays that they have, and other than July 4th in our country anyway, today is National Parents Day. Could not find the source of where this day came from, but I thought it was very appropriate for Mom Talk Radio. In 1994, Bill Clinton proclaimed the fourth Sunday in July as National Parent Day. And as the website that I found showed, it's not a day to give presents to moms and dads. That's really Mother's Day and Father's Day, and we certainly have that covered, as does Hallmark and all the greeting cards. Today's a day to do something with your parents, so I encourage all the moms out there and any dads who are listening to tell your kids it's National Parents Day. It's time for them to come up with some activities that they want to do with you today. So enjoy National Parents Day. Again, it's more of an unofficial, quirky holiday, but I thought it was interesting for our moms and dads out there. And before we jump into our lineup of guests, which we have very interesting topics today to cover, I wanted to quickly thank our sponsor, Premama. And you know we love Premama here at Mom Talk Radio. The website to visit is drinkpremama.com. And on social, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, it's Drink Premama as well. And these are the prenatal vitamins that you drink. It's the powder formula that you add to your favorite smoothie, your beverage, cold beverage, non-carbonated, by the way. It really messes it up if you put it in your Diet Coke. And basically, it eliminates those giant horse pills that are really hard to take when you're pregnant or thinking about coming pregnant, or anybody, really. Some people just gag on pills in general. So you add these prenatal vitamins powders to your favorite beverage. And the next thing in Premama's lineup is now called a digestive aid, and that is a caramel chew that is full of probiotics and fiber. So it's a wonderful product. Again, check it out at drinkpremama.com. And when we come back, our first guest is actually going to be Kathy Walsh. She has a new book out called Today an Elephant I Will Be. Kathy is a master meditator and an author of mindfulness books, and this is a children's book, so we'll get a chance to ask her about that. So it's a really cute little title too. We have two guests who are going to be covering foodie topics. Our first up will be Marcy, who's a mom blogger, who tell us about a mealtime challenge she issued to her two children. One's a tween and one's a teen, so that'll be interesting. And then we have Robert Rosenthal. He's the author of the cookbook called Short Order Dad, and he's going to be talking about dads in the kitchen and how moms just don't have to be cooking all the time. Dads can certainly do it. So that'll be a great segment. And then as fall rolls around, it's going to be college orientation. And actually, a lot of summertime orientations are going on right now. My nephew is going to UCF, and he went to his college orientation last week. And we will be talking to Megan Lauman. She is the director of behavior consultant, excuse me, for Tangram's life coaching program. And she'll be telling us about any college bound kids who have learning differences, ADD, ADHD, Asperger's, et cetera, how to prepare them and make the most out of their college experience. And then we'll close the show with Megan O'Connor. She is the co-founder and CEO of Clark. It's an operational system for tutors. So we've got some educational topics and some food topics and books. It's always great here and lots of fun at Mom Talk Radio. So stay with us. We'll be right back. We'll be joined by Kathy Walsh, the author of Today an Elephant I Will Be.
This is Mom Talk Radio, the number one podcast for busy moms, Mom Talk Radio.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of Mom Talk Radio that originally aired in July 2016.
We often think about meditation and yoga and those kind of mindfulness activities for adults, but we have, what about our kids? Is that a possibility? I'm pleased to welcome Kathy Walsh. She's the author of Today an Elephant I Will Be, which is not her first book, and she'll tell us a little bit about it. Welcome to Mom Talk Radio, Kathy.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. So you have the first book series is called Joy Oh Boy. And tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, there's five children's books and two parenting books, Raising Peaceful Kids and 30 Days to a Mindful Home. And then the children's books are all about love and gratitude and just teaching children kind of a little bit of mindfulness so that they can have a more peaceful life.
So this next book, the latest book is Today an Elephant I Will Be, correct?
Yes. Yes, it is.
So tell us a little bit, when did that come out, and is that in the same series, or is that a different set of...
No, that's a good question. No, it's in the Joy Oh Boy book series, and it's on the website, joyohboy.com, and it's Today an Elephant I Will Be. It's a beautiful story about children learning that they can connect to the energy of animal vibration and energy of animals around them and connect with peace and a feeling of peace by knowing that they have animal guides with them during the day.
Oh, interesting. And we know kids and animals, most kids love animals. So where did the idea for the book come from?
Well, both my girls love animals. They both just recently adopted rescue dogs, and we've been going to animal farms and doing a lot of rescue, and my one daughter's vegan, I'm vegetarian. So I think we've all been really connected to animals and the vibration of animals, and we've always loved them so much. So I think that's where it came from.
Oh, that's great. So your kids were a lot of the inspiration for it.
They were. Yes, they were. Absolutely.
That's wonderful. So when you talk about, and I said it in the intro, I think we think about adults need the meditation, the mindfulness exercises, mm-hmm. but kids need it just as much.
Yes. Kids actually need it. I feel like it's easier to teach them younger, and then once they have the tools, they have it the rest of their lives. Because think about it, they might need it when they're having a test or if they're getting bullied. Like their whole life, things are going to happen to them that they're going to need to be able to go inside and to connect to a calm, to be grateful, to be loving. You know, these are all really good tools for children to have, and they actually love it. They love when I teach them, they get it right away. They get the meditation. You would be surprised. They really do get it.
Yeah. And you're right. It's the earlier you start, the better at that point, especially mm-hmm. with the technology in their lives and so much overscheduling.
Yes. I was at the vegetarian festival and they asked me to come and teach a class in the middle of like 8,000 people in New York City at this veg fest. It was so much fun. And I thought, how am I going to do this? Like, how am I going to? And I sat down with the kids and I was like, okay, it doesn't matter where you are, where you can always connect to peace. And here's how we're going to do it. And we did some breathing and some meditation. And one of the moms was like, I can never get my child to sit down. Thank you so much. Because she was so calm the whole time. And I was like, I know these things, they really work. These really techniques really work.
That's great. So can you give other techniques that just as some examples of how to get kids to relax, meditate?
Well, we do one thing in the beginning of the class, which is a breathing ball. And it's this, it's kind of like a big ball that goes in and out. It's like a science ball that you can buy on Amazon. It's really nice. And it's all colors. And we breathe in and we breathe out and we breathe in. And they learn to use the breath to calm. So anytime they're stressed out or whatever, they can calm down. And then the second thing, one of the big things is gratitude. So we teach them gratitude, which any parent can do just by showing them that you're grateful for things. And then they pick up on it, or they have a gratitude journal at night. They can write in. It's just a habit. You know, you get used to it. Like, I am grateful sometimes just for the beauty of the sky or just the sun or the stars or whatever. Or you can be just grateful for a friend or a teacher, or there's so many things to be grateful for. And that is the key to a joyful life. And the other thing is this positivity. This one trick, and my mother always did it, actually. If you put on like a playlist of positive music in the morning, the kids will be singing those songs in their heads all day. It's so crazy, but it does work. You know, my mother
That's
used to
great.
Sing, oh, what a beautiful morning. Oh, what a beautiful day. And all my siblings, and I have six siblings, we all have raised our kids on that song.
Actually, I was on vacation with my family last week, and I always sing Good Morning, Mary Sunshine. I don't know if you ever heard that song. Because it's my name, too. And, of course, my teenagers are rolling their eyes, but my little one just eats it up. But I think the big ones like it, too. They just don't want to admit it now.
It's so smart. And when they get older, you'll be surprised. I mean, who could imagine that all of us would have sung that to our kids? Like, right. My mother never thought she was planting that big of a seed. But it's just, it's like being positive in life. Really, it what you put out comes back to you. And you can teach kids that right away.
Mindful parenting tips. Is that that's something mm-hmm. that you also cover as well?
I do, yes. Well, in Raising Peaceful Kids, it's more of a story. And I talk about, like, what is your intention for raising your children? So that's like one of the tips, like, okay, what is your intention? What are you thinking about? Like, because everyone has different things that they care the most about. And so it makes, I'll give you an example. So for me, I wanted my children to be able to listen to their hearts. So in order to teach them to listen to their hearts, I had to listen to their hearts and their intuition and let their intuition guide them. And they are now 25 and 27. And we still practice that. If they're like, I don't know what to do about something, I go, okay, let's go into your heart. Like, let's hear what your heart has to say. That was important to me. So when
That's
they said to me, I really am so unhappy, I hate school, I this isn't working for me, I had to say, okay, I hear you. Let's do something about it. Because I know we can make a difference and make your world a better place. And so that was important to me. But everyone has different things. So what's your intention is a big one, setting an intention.
Right. That's excellent. And I like the idea of, you know, sometimes I'm always about my kids finding solutions, find peaceful and positive solutions. But sometimes it isn't in your head. It is in your heart. So that's a very interesting concept you brought up. Where can our listeners find? So Today an Elephant I Will Be is the latest. What's the age range of the book? And then where can our listeners find the book?
So the age range of the picture books are, you know, basically from newborn to like eight. They're for younger children. And they can find them on Amazon. On joyoboy.com, either one.
Okay, wonderful. That's joyohboy.com.
Yes, thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Kathy. Best of luck. I'm sure we'll see more books from you in the future. And what a fascinating topic. And keep up the great work. And when we come back, we'll shine the spotlight on moms. Marcy Weber blogs at whatsfordinnermoms.com. We'll be talking about her food challenge she gave to her two children. Stay with us.
Mom Talk Radio, a busy mom's best friend.
It's my favorite segment of Mom Talk Radio. We shine a spotlight on moms, everyday moms, who are fighting the battle on the ground in parenting and eating. And in this segment, Marcy Weber, a mom of two children, 12 and 15, will be talking to us about her weeknight dinner challenge she gave her kids. And Marcy blogs at whatsfordinnermoms.com and tweets at Kool-Aid Moms 2, and that's the numeral 2. Welcome to Mom Talk Radio, Marcy.
Thank you, Mary.
Tell us, what are you doing? It's summertime. What are you doing with your kids to get them to come up with different meal ideas?
3 years ago, we started this game of having them come up with different meal ideas every weeknight. It was our goal to do it for a year. And we are challenging them to try to come up with different things, different ways to use the food that is around us. We take them to the farmer's market. We take them to the market with us. We go to farms. We just got a new CSA share, a community-supported agriculture share. So every week we go out to a farm and pick up a box of surprise vegetables. And then the kids and I come home and we research, what do we do with kale? What do we do with rutabaga and all the things that are in the box that we normally don't see?
Right. And of course, it's all seasonal and local to your area, right?
Exactly. Exactly. We try to stay as local as possible and as close to natural as possible. But sometimes, especially living in the Midwest, that's just not possible.
Where I'm in the South, and sometimes I hear these vegetables that people get in the Midwest, and I'm jealous. And, you know, we basically have citrus. So when you started the challenge, and it was a year, I mean, that's a big chunk of time to basically maintain that challenge. How did it go?
The first year was rough. We ended up moving twice within 1 year. So we moved from New York to the Midwest. And so for about 3 months or 4 months, our lives were chaotic. And we ended up going out to eat a lot. And that's what we were trying to get away from. I realized that we had been eating out far too much. My children knew drive-through toys better and could debate which restaurant had better drive-through toys than they could actually name vegetables. So we decided that was a big problem. And so it was rough that first year, but in the end, it was good because it made us think about what we were putting in our mouths and realizing a green salad a day was just not going to cover our vegetables.
We have that issue. My husband and I constantly say, oh, we go out too much. We go through drive-through too much. But we're busy. And it's like you said, it's hectic. And I didn't even move twice. So I don't know how you did it. So what do you think? Are you still doing this kind of challenge? Or is the kids aging out of it? Or what's the situation?
We are still doing the challenge, actually. For the first year, we probably did about a third of the time. And now that we're into the third year, I'd say we're up to about 75 to 90% of the time.
That's great. Good for you.
They actually enjoy it more now that they're older because they're doing more research. They're looking at different holidays, national food days. Ooh, you know, this is coming up. What can we do to celebrate this? And I actually launched the challenge to my kids on Chinese New Year. So we made Mugu Gai Pan that first year. And so we had to find out, okay, what is this dish? You know, we found out mugu means mushroom. You know,
Gai
was chicken and pan was slice. So the kids had this history lesson with it, too, which was even better that they could start to find out where are these foods from? Why are they called what they are? So they really like it a lot more now.
There's multiple benefits in this challenge. So that's really great.
And yes, you blog. There are, you know, I was just reading. My daughter's getting older now, and I was just reading a study that said 30% of college freshmen couldn't boil an egg, or 50% couldn't make a simple spaghetti sauce.
Right.
And I want to be my kids to be able to do those things by the time they get to college.
I told my kids the other day, I have a 16-year-old and a 14-year-old, and I said, there are two things you need to be learning, because I've been trying, and over the years, of course, I make them each do chores and everything, but I said, you need to definitely be able to cook for yourself and do your own laundry. Those are the two things.
Exactly.
Wonderful. So you blog all about this, too, at whatsfordinnermoms.com. And what else is on the blog? Mostly about your foodie family?
Yeah, it's mostly about my foodie family. Both of my children are special needs children. My son is autistic, and it's talking about our relationship with food, how we get through those times when they might not like what they're trying, but that we keep offering it back up and getting them to try new things. My daughter is in Germany this week, and she just sent me a text that said she tried Ox this week.
Oh, good for her.
Them fearless tasters. You know, she's like, she was really happy and proud of herself that she was able to say, I'm going to try this. I've never had it before, but I'll do it.
Wonderful.
And also,
thank
we
you.
Talk about Disney a lot. Our favorite place to be in the world is we travel quite a bit, and our favorite place to be is Disney World, so I have a special Disney section on there, too.
Oh, wonderful. That's in our backyard, so we know about Disney food, too. Thank you so much, Marcy, for joining us. Good luck. I just love your challenges and your whole topic on your blog. It's whatsfordinnersmoms.com, and you tweet at Kool-Aid Moms 2. That's a numeral 2. And when we come back, we're joined by Robert Rosenthal. He is the author of the cookbook Short Order Dad, so we'll keep the food discussion going. Stay with us.
Mom Talk Radio, a busy mom's best friend. Now, Mary Donnellan on Mom Talk Radio.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of Mom Talk Radio that originally aired in July 2016.
It's Mary and for Maria on Mom Talk Radio, and we're continuing the food discussion with our next guest, Robert Rosenthal. He is the author of the cookbook Short Order Dad, is also an award-winning international ad exec, a stand-up comedian, a professionally trained chef, and a cook for two daughters. I think the last one is the most important, right, Robert?
Well, yeah, it turns out that it is. I mean, the oldie, even though it's called Short Order Dad, and it's written by a guy, and I kind of wrote it with a, you know, with a sense of humor, it's powered by women. I mean, I grew up on my grandmother's food. My mother wasn't a particularly good cook, but that actually helped me kind of develop my own skills. And my kids named me Short Order Dad because I make breakfast for them, Mary, pretty much every day. And I would say that my daughters, I said, what do you want for breakfast? One wants scrambled eggs. The other one wants egg whites. One wants the whole wheat toast. The other one wanted, you know, white toast, chocolate milk, skim milk, almond butter, peanut butter.
Right.
So I said, what do I look like, a short order cook? And they looked at me and they said, yeah, Short Order Dad. That's you.
Exactly. You're behind this stove with the spatula in your hand. You win, right?
Yeah, just making whatever they want, whenever they want it. Yeah, exactly.
Right. So the cookbook, when did it come out?
The end of May, which allowed us, frankly, to get the word out that it was a pretty appropriate Father's Day gift. 70% of the women in this country are in the workforce in one way or the other, and as a consequence of that, you know, guys theoretically are picking up, you know, some of the slack, certainly when it comes to grocery shopping. But what I couldn't help but notice is that we're cooking less at home than we ever before as a people. There's less home cooking in our country than in any other developed nation. And it's weird for me because not only are people eating out, but when they bring home food rather than preparing it and eating it around the dining room table, you see people bringing takeout food home, sitting on the couch in front of a television, watching cooking shows. That's really pornography when you're watching somebody else do it and you're not. So I mean, even though I wrote it, you know, ostensibly for guys, the beneficiaries of having guys cooking is the rest of the family, is the, you know, is mom and kids and all that. The thing I think that, you know, your listeners would want to know is that the conceit of the book is I went to cooking school so you don't have to. And I have a very guy-friendly formula for all of my recipes. It's like how to get the most taste with the fewest ingredients, right, and the least effort. You know what I mean? It's like super, right, guy-friendly stuff. So it's really made, well, anybody could benefit from, you know, learning how to make great-tasting food at home, and I did make it easy that way. It's kind of directed to guys as a way to, you know, maybe do their share of the work in the kitchen.
Amen. Amen, brother. We agree with you. All the moms out there are saying, yeah, you got it. You got the right answer. And tell me, it's not all grilling, right? It's not all grilling recipes.
I'm glad that you asked the question. There's not one single grilling recipe in there. In fact,
excellent.
My idea was basically in doing the book, I want to take a guy's comfort on the grill and bring his game inside. You know, I could turn the kitchen into a playroom. That's what it is that I did. There's 100 recipes in that book, Mary. I would say 95 of them don't use more than 5 or 6 ingredients. It includes everything from appetizers to desserts to side dishes to main courses, even a couple of cocktail recipes because, you know, it's apparent you have to drink periodically. And not only the recipes, but I think this is really crucially important to know. I spend time up front in the book talking about, you know, how you should shop and what ingredients you might want to have on hand in the kitchen, in the,
right,
in the cupboard, what tools to have. And I spent literally a huge chapter on the 10 fundamental techniques, you know, whether it's roasting or braising or sautéing or any of those kind of things. So the book is a primer in some ways to give to anybody that wants to be a little bit more equipped in the kitchen, but have fun doing it. That's the nature of the book. There's not a grilling recipe on there.
In my household, the balance of power in the kitchen goes to my husband because he's a better cook.
Okay.
So, and my kids go, oh, mom. I said, look, I have no qualms. And you're right. I work. Most moms work now, or if they're not in the home, and it, believe me, parenting is the toughest job ever, but why not let the dads do it? So I totally love this book. Give me what's your number one tip you like to tell guys about cooking?
Get the best ingredients you can and don't mess them up too much. If there's a tip, it's kind of that. You could go out, as I do periodically, and I buy the chicken thighs at Costco. When you buy chicken thighs at Costco, you're buying 32 chicken thighs. I mean, there's enough for, like, you know, you could throw a party. But that's because I eat them like lollipops. But the point I'm going to make is this. If you have a seasoning that you love, this is one of the great two-ingredient dishes in the world. If you have a seasoning that you like, whether it be Italian or whether it be Latin or whether it be whatever it is that you're excited by, or even if it's just salt and lemon, to be honest with you, I put some dry rub of spice on those chicken thighs. I put them into the oven at the highest possible heat, basically until the fire alarm goes off. And then when that happens, I turn off the oven. I let them sit until they get a little bit crispy, and I'm eating unbelievably delicious food, better than anything that you can get from takeout. So, you know, that's kind of my premise there. If you're looking for a tip, it's like it doesn't have to be complicated to be great. And it's also, you know, kind of easy to make really good tasting food. And that is really why I think the response to the book has been great. I mean, the most gratifying thing is people sending me pictures and going, I'm making your stuff, and it's fantastic. You know, it was reviewed by a bunch of people. Gail Simmons from Top Chef wrote a nice thing about it, and she said, you know what, I'm getting it from my own father, my brothers, my husband, my best friend, my uncle, and my nephew. And that's really a compliment here. I'm looking forward to reading it. I'd love to know what you think.
So you also have a column that appears regularly in the Huffington Post, and you're the food humorist at the website The Daily Meal, and I can see why, because you've obviously written a great cookbook, but you spice it up with humor, as they say.
You know, you mentioned in the introduction, Mary, I was an international advertising executive. I've eaten in 3,000 restaurants on like five continents. That was really the best part of my job. They paid me to present creative ideas, but at night I did stand-up in New York for a number of years, which was fun, and then I went at night also and got the professional culinary degree, and I combine all those things. I'd like to say that I actually transitioned before it was cool, when I went from being an ad guy to being a food guy. So, yeah. I do writing in the Huffington. I'm on the Daily Meal. I write a lot about culinary tourism. That's kind of my area of expertise, and you know, now I have a book, and I'm spreading the word about that.
Wonderful. It's a very colorful background, and congratulations on a very successful book. So tell our listeners where we can find the book.
Well, you can find the book on any of the places where they sell books, whether that be, you know, Amazon, BarnesandNoble.com, Walmart.com, or the easiest way, if you want, I suppose, is just go to ShortOrderDad.com, and you'll find me and where I might be on Twitter and Instagram or Facebook, and I think there's probably going to be a link to all of those aforementioned online book purchasing sites.
Wonderful. So congratulations. It's Robert Rosenthal. Again, the website is shortorderdad.com. Check it out. You'll find links to purchase the cookbook. And best of luck. And when we come back, Megan Lauman is a behavior consultant for Tangram's Life Coaching Program. She'll be giving us top 10 tips for students with disabilities who are heading off to college. Stay with us.
This is Mom Talk Radio, the number one podcast for busy moms, Mom Talk Radio. You're listening to an encore broadcast of Mom Talk Radio that originally aired in July 2016.
As I mentioned at the top of the show, it is college orientation season in the summer, and in a few weeks, most college students will be heading off to school to their first experience at a university or college setting of their choice. And I'm pleased to welcome Megan Lauman. She is a behavior consultant for Tangram's Life Coaching Program, who is going to talk to us about tips for students, actually, who are exceptional learners who are heading to college. If your student or someone you know in your family or friend has ADD, ADHD, Asperger's, any other challenges, Megan's going to give us some tips. Welcome to Mom Talk Radio, Megan.
Thank you very much.
Tell us, just start off at the top. You've got some great tips here for kids who are heading off to college who have challenges in learning.
I think the number one tip that I would give students that are looking at college is to determine if college is the best option for them. I think we traditionally think immediately after high school that students need to move on to a four-year college. But for some students, that's just not their area to go. They're not great learners. They may struggle in a classroom setting. So I think the first thing is, look what your options are. Is a community college a better option? Is a trade school a better option? Looking at apprenticeships, looking at vocational programs. Because I don't think everybody is designed to go to a four-year traditional college.
Right. And I think that actually holds true regardless of exceptional learners or not, because we actually have had this ongoing discussion. I have a 16-year-old, and I think that we've moved away from kids who just maybe, like you said, need to go to a trade school. We don't have enough electricians. We don't have, you know what I mean? I think we're missing a lot of tradesmen and women these days because of the push. We think college is the be-all and end-all.
I completely agree with that.
So what are other tips?
I think a second one is to do your research. If you are looking at a four-year traditional college, find out what services they offer for students. Probably the biggest thing that I have seen in students transitioning from high school to college is not knowing how to access those services once they're in the college setting. In high schools, when they're going through school, they're right there. There's an office that's there. The parents can go in, get the information. The parents are really the advocates at that point. But once they get to college, the student has to be their own advocate. The parents can help, but most of that has to come from the student. So contacting the schools, when you're doing tours, college tours, things like that, ask about the disability services. There are schools out there that have additional programs that will work with students who are exceptional learners to provide additional tutoring, supports, things like that. But definitely looking into the college's disability services. Each college calls it something different.
depending on what that department is. But if you ask, it'll be something similar to the special education services that they're used to in the school system. But in colleges, they're going to have to seek that out.
Right. And that's actually was my question. Does it depend on the size of the school? Obviously, the size of the school would determine the extent of those kind of programs or resources, correct?
Not necessarily. There are some very small universities and colleges out there that have some exceptional programs for students with disabilities or exceptional learners. With the Office of Disability Services, what you're going to get is basic services, typically. You're going to get that you can have, your student can have extended time on tests, or they need to take tests in a quiet room. Some of those exceptions to the normal general rules of college test taking or note taking, or you know, what services are available. In addition, there are some universities and some colleges that have additional programs on top of that to provide additional services.
Right, right. So what else? We have time for about a couple more tips. So give us the other, because you have 10, and unfortunately, we're not going to get to them all. So
right.
Give us another top one for us.
Probably my two biggest ones are assemble your support team before you leave for college. Know who you want to be a part of that team. Tied into that is get to know FERPA, which is the Federal Education Rights and Privacy Act, which protects that information that the college can share with other people, including your parents. So that's a big thing that I have seen college students run into, is because all through school, their parents have been the advocates for them. Well, once they get to college, they have to advocate for themselves. So knowing what that law says and what information can be shared with their parents, what can't be shared with their parents, who they need to let know that they can share that information. A big part also is getting involved in vocational rehabilitation. It's a state-administered program, but it's nationwide. And VR can help with a lot of school things. So definitely get in with your VR office.
And would that be on the campus, you mean?
No, that's actually a separate program. And you should be able to parents or students can do a search for their vocational rehabilitation services within their state to get connected with that office.
Gotcha.
And then VR will work with the college to provide some services.
Got it. And then FERPA, FERPA, and that's just Google that and you'd find out a link or resources there.
Correct. Probably the last thing that I'll say is use technology. There's a ton of resources out there that, whether that's screen readers or smart pens that allow you to take notes more effectively, just really look into your technology and use that to your best advantage.
Right. Thank you so much. These are wonderful tips. And if we go to thetangramway.org, that is where we can find the Tangram Life Coaching Program information. Thank you so much, Megan, for joining us. And when we come back, we'll wrap the show with Megan O'Connor. We'll be talking about Clark, an operational assistant for tutors. Stay with us.
Mom Talk Radio, a busy mom's best friend.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of Mom Talk Radio that originally aired in July 2016.
This is Mary and for Maria again on Mom Talk Radio for our last segment of this great show today. I'm pleased to welcome Megan O'Connor. She is the co-founder and CEO of Clark, and Clark is an operational assistant for tutors, and the website is HiClark.com, as in hello, hi. Welcome to Mom Talk Radio, Megan.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. So what is Clark? Tell us, and how does it make a mom's life easier?
Great question. Well, Clark is an operational assistant for tutors. So if you're a parent who has ever had a tutor working with one of your students, you know that it can be a bit of a hairy process in terms of getting things scheduled, making sure you have a time and location figured out, in addition to remembering to write out a check or send your student with cash to their session. What we serve is really a digital service, so that way you can automate everything around the tutoring session that your student has with one of their beloved tutors.
So is this is parent-driven, not tutor-driven?
Great. Yeah. What it really is a means by which a tutor will run their business. So if you're a parent, you can expect to work with one of your tutors, perhaps one you already do, and have things be a little bit more digitized. So instead of you getting emails or text messages or talking to them in person about how things went, you'll get a formal report back from Clark of how tutoring is going with your student and how they're progressing. The great thing about that is that's the type of information you can take with you into a parent-teacher conference. And really what we're doing is taking all the stress out of managing this relationship in your life. So things like payments become automatic, invoicing becomes digital, and scheduling happens automatically for you.
As a user of a math tutor, actually my son had a math tutor for a long time. I would have loved this because I was always trying to catch up with, it was either via text or an email or something to get a schedule going and a payment. And this sounds wonderful. So what was the idea or the inspiration behind this?
Actually, I've worked in education for a long time and I've kind of touched all different facets of it, but I've probably the most predominant educator in my life has always been my mom. So I was raised by a single mom who's a public school teacher and then tutored on the side. And a lot of teachers tutor on the side to make ends meet. Unfortunately, yes. We live in a society where being a teacher isn't necessarily the most lucrative job that you could pick. So tutoring is something that really fits into their existing workflow. So after school, she would tutor a couple of different kids, and I would just watch crazy things happen when she would run her side tutoring business. Things like people canceling on her last minute, her having to figure out QuickBooks or filing her taxes, and some of those small business operations that going into running a side gig that really were time-consuming and took away from either time she was spending in the classroom or time she was spending with me and my brother. So what we were thinking is, how can I automate and put my mom's tutoring business, you know, on autopilot, really? And how can I do that for tutors everywhere? So that way they can focus on what they do best, teaching, and not have to worry so much about all the different admin work that goes into running a side gig.
Right, right. So is it actually, I should have asked this at the beginning, is it an app or is it just like a software program that you use? How does it physically work?
So it's an app, and then also for the most part, we're going to interact with you via SMS. So it's a conversational means of communicating with the service. That means that it's super easy. You can text us at any time and we're on it. We're helping you take care of your busy work.
Oh, that's great. Okay. So, and then to just talk about tutors for a second, you mentioned something about assistance for the most under-resourced. Tell us what you mean by that.
So when you think about it, there's all these different assistant apps and services that are coming out in the world. Even Facebook has one now as well, where they'll do personal assistance for you. And I don't know about you, but I feel as if a lot of the assistant software and apps and digital services that exist are fantastic, but they're really geared at the upper echelon of society. And those people that truly need assistance, in my opinion, are educators. Those people that are always under-resourced, are always trying to make the most with as little as possible. And I think that we really have to open up our eyes to think, what could happen if we put assistance in the hands of educators? Imagine how much more of the world could really be touched by someone who could instruct them in a meaningful way.
Right. That's true. Very good point. So tell our listeners where they can find more information then.
So listeners can find out more information at HiClark.com. We're running a couple of different invite-only services right now, and we'd love for any educators and any of the mom out there lives to sign up. So HiClark.com, and you can sign up right there.
Great. Wonderful. Thank you so much and best of luck. It sounds like a wonderful idea and perfect for educators and parents. And that was Megan O'Connor with Clark, and that's HiClark, HiClark.com. And thank you so much for listening to this edition of Mom Talk Radio. I've enjoyed bringing you all these wonderful guests and topics. And you can find this show and others at MomTalkRadio.com and next week, and find us on Facebook.com/MomTalkRadio. Have a wonderful week, everyone. Enjoy the week with your children and your family, and stay cool in the summer sun.